Diary, we talk all about the history of Elford, New York. Today, I'm joined by the wonderful school archivist.
Hi, everyone. This is Lori Lounsbury Mee, and happy to be here.
Thank you for being here. I'm always happy to talk to you. You are the most knowledgeable person in the subject on campus by far. All right, so
try.
So today, in the spirit of fall, which it now officially is as we're recording it, we are going to be talking about ghost stories around Elford. So we already kind of touched on this, I mean, you previously, but do you believe in ghosts?
I don't know. I mean, I've never had an experience, so I can't, you know, say absolutely yes, I believe. But at the same time, I've talked to so many other people who have had experiences, and I'm not going to disbelieve or tell them that they're lying, you know, through their experience. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and yeah, I guess I don't know, but I also don't think I want to have an experience. I think I'd be freaked out if I see somebody or something. I don't know. So whether, you know, I'm keeping that internal block up or if it just hasn't been my time yet, I'm not sure. But for my 32 years as the archivist, it's very common for students to stop by my office because they have seen, heard, felt something in a building or out on the campus that they, you know, tie to some sort of a ghost, supernatural being, you know, something, and they want to know if there's any history or story to go with it.
Yeah. And I don't know if I would want a ghost experience either. They do seem scary, but it's good that everybody knows where to go to when they do have questions about that kind of stuff.
I can try. Yep, I try. But it's definitely interesting. It's very interesting to hear some of the consistency over 30 years of what people have experienced.
Yeah. You have to know some fascinating things about, like, I mean, just like putting together, like, how many times has this been experienced and stuff like that?
Mm-hmm.
It's got to be really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I think we should start talking about Sally, but then we're going to circle around to those questions.
Okay, sounds good.
So tell us about who is Sally.
So Sally, she was actually a skeleton. And so in the 19th century, right before the advent of plastics, it was the norm for, and we still, like, there are still people who donate their bodies to science, right, for scientific study. And so people would do that. And in this case, it was a way for the woman to make some money. So Sally started out with a different name. Sally was her nickname. She was literally a female skeleton. And Sally, unfortunately in the end for her, was part of a love triangle. And so she fell in love with a married man and wanted the wife out of the way. And she actually poisoned and killed the wife. So she became the first woman in Allegheny County convicted of murder. And originally her sentence was to be hung, because at that time in the mid-19th century, the Allegheny County seat was in Angelica, and the jail was there. And there actually were a handful of hangings as far as executions. But the governor changed her sentence to life in prison. And I don't know if it was because she was female or what the circumstances were, but she ended up in Sing Sing Prison down toward New York City. And our university president at the time, he visited her and paid her. There's different stories. He either paid her $300, he paid her $250. Anyway, he paid her a fairly good chunk of money when she was in prison, that when she died, her body would come to the university. And I'm sure his intention was fully that we would use it in, like, biology classes, mm-hmm. right, for anatomy and for study and academic reasons.
Yeah.
So after she died, we, you know, got her skeleton, and she was for many years stored in the Steinheim, so our stone castle on campus, used for classroom study, but she was also borrowed at times by students and involved in a number of different campus pranks. I have some, you know, photos in the archives of students posing with her. But so she became known as Sally the Skeleton. Her last name was LaSalle, so maybe that's how Sally came about. We don't know exactly what happened to Sally. We know where she was through about 1940, because the biology labs, when Allen Hall was built, now we call it Perlman Hall, we have changed the name of some buildings, the skeleton was moved to Perlman Hall because our biology labs were there. But by that time, you know, we're getting to the time of there are replica skeletons that we can purchase rather than needing human skeletons.
Yeah.
And so one story that I heard was that the current longtime biology professor, Dr. H.O. Burdick, may have given her a proper burial on his farm outside of Elford. So I hope that that's what happened.
Yeah, I hope so too. In the papers I was telling you about, my friend found some papers in the AUTV lab for, I think someone was putting it together for a Fialux news segment. Well, I don't think it's got a lot of information you don't know, because most of them say, I got this information from the archivist. So I think this is probably mostly your work, which I think is pretty cool. But I did find some slips from a Fialux news from the 1940s that were talking about how, like, well, no one really knows what happened to it, but that there was this, everybody thought that she died for a second. What happened there?
Yeah, so there, a restaurant downtown, and in all likelihood, 1940s, it probably wasn't the Collegiate. But, well, because the Collegiate that we know in 2024 is not in the location it was when it first opened 100 years ago. The Collegiate this year is its 100th year, which is amazing. So there was a different diner downtown, and somebody put a skeleton outside the doorway of the diner and hung a sign on it that said, I ate here. And the owner of the restaurant was not real pleased with that. So he saw it, and he threw the skeleton out into the street, and a car came along and ran it over. And everybody's horrified. They're like, oh no, Sally's been ruined. But come to find out, it was a different skeleton. And it wasn't Sally.
That's good.
A whole other story of where the other skeleton came from, which I don't know at the moment, but yeah. And was it a real human skeleton with a replica? I don't know, but yeah. But
yeah, that does raise a couple questions.
Exactly.
Hmm.
Yeah, because they're not not the thing you usually think. Yeah, we had for a long time. But not for the 1940s. We had an undertaker in town, and he was actually well known in Western New York for he had invented some new embalming techniques. And so, right, you know, it's every small town had one of everything, right? And yeah, you have it at your local undertaker funeral home in town. But
wow,
yeah,
that's pretty interesting, though.
Yep, yeah,
Nice. And I saw it was like, I read also a couple stories about students who did break in and steal Sally for, like, you know, like frat boy hazing or something. Or,
mm-hmm, exactly, yeah. Using it to like to scare. You know, young men who are pledging a fraternity, or to take it for a ride in the backseat of a car, or
That's crazy doing that with a real skeleton.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah. I also found an interesting thing from Find a Grave in the papers that I found that so Sally's original name was Jane, right? Or was it Jane something?
Jane Brooks. You're right. Jane Brooks killed Mary LaSalle.
Yes. Yeah. Over Mary LaSalle's husband, then, probably.
Yep.
But apparently, Jane Brooks' mother's name is Sally, which I thought was interesting, because her nickname for the rest of the time becomes Sally.
Yeah, yeah. Yep, exactly.
But it must have been a common name in the time. All right. So, moving on, I would like to circle back and ask you, like, what consistent things do students keep telling you over the years?
Well, certainly the brick. Students who live in the brick have had a variety of experiences, and it's never in the same place. Like, it's not always the same floor or the same room, and it's not the same thing. So it might be that someone's in their room and they swear that somebody's walking up and down the hall, like pacing, and they open the door and there's no one there.
Mm-hmm.
Or the lights are on and off, or, you know, sort of something's, they're not seeing objects being moved around, but things happen that are like, whoa, like, you know, sound, sight. One person was looking for their wallet, searched their room all over, and they're like, can't find my wallet. And this voice in their ear said, look in your top dresser drawer.
What?
And they looked in the top dresser drawer, and there's their wallet.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So, and so we can trace the history. So the building opened in 1860. And so just think about how long that building has been opened, like pre-Civil War. But in World War I, the Army contracted with the university, and they contracted with a number of campuses, to do some pretty quick training of soldiers. And so because campuses had the teachers in place, they had the labs in place, you know, residence halls, and so all the components were there. to be able to train. A lot of it was engineering training, like surveying and officer training, that they wanted to fairly quickly train men to be sent overseas. Mm-hmm. And so the Army, when they contracted with us, they rented the brick. And so the women, because at that point the brick was a women's residence hall, the women were moved out and placed elsewhere, and the Army took over the brick. And so the basement of the brick had a dining hall. So I graduated, did my undergrad at Alfred, and graduated in 91. And so, like, I had a choice of either going to 8 Hall or brick for meals. But what the university didn't have was an infirmary, and the Army put an infirmary in, I think probably standard issue, to take care of 6 soldiers. But then the world got hit in 1918 with the influenza epidemic, which was global. And if we think COVID was bad, we at least understood germs and what was going on. Mm-hmm. In 1918, they really had, no recourse to even figure out what was going on. It was deadly, in that you could feel fine in the morning and you'd be dead. You could be dead that night.
Oh my God.
And it hit young and healthy. Usually you think kids, but more even like you think college age. I think usually the college age students are 20, 30s, you're more robust. And it's the elderly or like little children. This particular strain just was horrible. It killed like 10% of the world's population.
Oh my God.
But so 9 people died in the brick, in the Army infirmary from this epidemic. More people would have died in town. There were a couple of faculty members that died in their homes. And so that's where I presume, stories, come from that. I know also in the 1860s or 70s, there was a poet living there. He wasn't going to school here, but his sister was here. It's kind of a weird arrangement, but he was staying in the brick probably over the summer. He got sick and he died in the brick. So, right, death is everywhere. We're all going to experience it at some point or other.
Yeah.
And so, yes, people have died in the building. And so I think that, there's some historical basis for the potential. So probably, I'll say 25 years ago, I was working on the reference desk in Herrick one evening, and I had 3 young ladies come in, and they all lived in the brick, and they had been using the Ouija board.
Oh, no.
And they were, a little anxious. They're like, oh, my gosh, we were just on the Ouija board. And we made contact with a nurse. But she's upset because she's in love with a soldier. And I can't remember if they said he just died or he's dying. They're like, can you tell us anything? And I said, well, let me tell you about World War I. And so it was just, so those are the kinds of things I can't, I'm not going to say you guys are nuts, right? Because they knew nothing of that history.
They knew nothing?
They knew nothing of the history of the building or anything.
What are the chances?
I know, exactly. And so, if it's true, it certainly was for them.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So the brick, yes. And so the current story right now is, the ghost story is that a cow haunts the brick. Which is, never really thought of an animal haunting someplace. That one there's definitely no historical basis to it. Because as the story goes, which is partly true, cows they can go upstairs, but it's really difficult for them to come downstairs the way their legs are articulated. And we do know that students did take cows to the second story of Alumni Hall. Alumni Hall, before it was renovated 40 years ago, it was a whole auditorium. The whole second floor was like just one big auditorium, and the 2 staircases going up to it. And so students did borrow a cow from like the Alfred State Farm, bring it up and put it in the auditorium. But it's just challenging for them to go downstairs. Because if you ever see cows, they generally are unloaded on a ramp. So it's easier for them to go down a ramp. Just their legs are articulated backwards. So the story with the brick is that somebody took a cow upstairs in the brick. And because it couldn't come back downstairs, they had to slaughter it in the building. If you ever stop to think about what the logistics of slaughtering an animal that big, you're not going to do that.
I feel like the room would still smell of blood.
It would be bad. Anyway, it's funny. It's a funny, funny story to tell. But that one doesn't have any basis. But another one that students say is that they will see a little boy, like a little blonde-haired boy, 2, maybe 3 years old, running around in like the quad area. So in front of Herrick Library, maybe up toward Susan Howell Hall. And so that one's been also fairly consistent, and that one could logically go back to, again, late 19th century. There used to be a big house. So where our Carillon sits, the Carillon is that steel bell tower sitting to the left of Susan Hull Hall. There was a really big house there. And the president lived up there, President Allen and his wife. And first I thought it was their son, William. Their first son died when he was about 2.5 years old. And I thought, oh, and they called him Willie. I thought, that must be Willie. But then I discovered that William died in Wisconsin. They were visiting family out in Wisconsin. Oh. I'm like, oh, well, gosh, maybe that's not him then. And then I discovered that their grandson died in that house when he was about 2.5 years old. He had really? Come with his mom for a big event related to the local church, and he got sick and thought he was doing better, and then he went worse and he passed away. So I think it's probably the grandson maybe that we see running around.
Oh, and do you know what the grandson's name was? It's okay if you don't.
I don't know his first name. Yeah, his last name is Champlin, but I haven't been able to figure out his first name yet.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
That's tragic though.
Yeah, it is sad. But, and you know, another unfortunate piece of life, right?
Yeah.
You know, is, you know, before they knew a lot about medicine. Yeah. A lot of kids died. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was unfortunate.
And we were talking about before the podcast too. I thought it was interesting how all the papers I could find about the little boy, it was all only centered on Herrick, but they don't seem to show the full story that it's like,
What happens is that somebody, so I've never heard, and it's like, just because I haven't heard it doesn't mean anything really, but I've never had anybody say that they've seen this little boy running around in the stacks of Herrick. But what happens is that once somebody puts it in print, the next person just repeats it and reprints it. So that's how a lot of times, you know, if you don't verify the information, like, you know, it's sort of doing your due diligence and research, going back to primary sources as much as you can. And that's what I'm trying to do with a lot of our stories that we keep telling around the campus. Like, can I verify them in a primary source? Like, can I make sure that we're really telling the story correctly? So there was a house on the side of Herrick Library. Let's see, no, there wouldn't have been anything there when he was alive. Do you know he would have? There was a house there in 1851, built right next to Alumni Hall. And so we have the Gothic building, which is behind Alumni Hall, and the Gothic is part of that house. But so, you know, he certainly could have run around the house and the lawn in front of that house, you know, and, you know, if it's just on the site. But yeah, I'm not sure. But I really think a lot of it goes, we used to have an Alfred drama club.
Mm-hmm.
And for a number of years, they would like to do, like, for like a little fundraiser, they would do Halloween ghost stories, like ghost tours, campus ghost tours. And they embellished a lot, and they came up with their own stories.
Okay.
And so again, once those get told, either verbally or, you know, somebody writes them down, like I have copies of their tour script in the archives, and somebody will read, like, oh, it's okay, I don't care, it's not true, I think that's a cool story, I'm going to reuse it anyway. So, right, it just perpetuates.
Yeah, it just keeps going and going.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. Actually, that explains a lot of the papers that I did find. All right, let's see. And there were a few more spots we wanted to talk about. How about the scariest looking building on campus, the Steinheim? What can you tell us about that?
It's definitely the stormy night, you know, castle. So the Steinheim was built. So remember I mentioned President Allen and his wife lived in the big white house. They built the Steinheim for their personal collection, so it became a museum. And when they passed away, Jonathan died in 1892, Abigail died in 1902, so 10 years apart. They were both cremated, and their ashes were stored together in this big old Grecian urn. But it was stored in the museum with the rest of the collection. And so for decades, their ashes were in there. And so whether, again, and they live next door too, and they both died in the house next door. So I haven't heard anybody say that they've seen a figure in the Steinheim. The staff, when we used to have staff in the building, the elevator would go up and down by itself, or like the lights would be on and they swore they should, you know, they turned them off. So it was more things like that. And they would just jokingly say that Abigail haunted the building. Because there's a stone in the building that has her name and birth and death dates on it, and the urn used to sit on top of that stone. But I did recently have a student tell me that she was in Howell Hall practicing for a recital, and the front doors were open, and she looked at the front door, and there was an old woman sitting in a rocking chair in the doorway of Susan Howell Hall. And she originally came to my office to ask questions about Susan Howell, like, who was Susan Howell? Because she's thinking, oh, I must have just seen Susan Howell. And when she told me, because it's about 2 years between the time she told me, she came in to ask for information, but she didn't tell me why she was asking. And then it was a couple years later, she was in my office and she actually told me why. And I said, oh, no, no, I don't think you saw Susan. I think you probably saw Abigail, because Abigail Allen's house was right there. And she they used to have rocker chairs on the front porch. And Abigail did die in the house. So good chance she saw Abigail.
That's really cool. Yeah. Is that the only reporting you've gotten from Susan Howell?
Yes, I think so. I think so.
Okay. I'm surprised because it looks like, I mean, it's such a beautiful building. It doesn't look that old, but you know.
Right.
In the middle of campus.
The center original part of it were the columns. That was built in 1930. So it is almost 100 years old. And then the wings, the two side pieces were built in the late 1950s.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. So not as old as some of the buildings around it, but not a spring chicken either.
Yeah. All right. So moving on to like the more wooded area. I found this story about John's Pond, and we were talking, how familiar are you with the story?
So John's Pond is not on Pine Hill. It's on the other side of the valley. So if you were to be looking at the Alfred State campus, and so you want to look north, so to the right of the campus, there's a big red house up on the hill, and John's Pond was up on the hill behind there. Today it's all filled in. It's kind of cattails grow over and kind of took it over. So it's more of a marshy area right now.
Okay.
So the story goes, yeah, that there was a house up there and there was, but I think his name was John Langworthy, maybe. The Langworthy farm was there. So the story is, and I've never really even tried to verify this one, that
I could feed you the names if you need.
That there was water in the basement and love triangle again. I think it was two women fighting over him.
Yeah.
Right?
Wait, no, it was two men fighting over his wife. Okay.
And so one guy knocked the other guy down the stairs, and then there was water in the basement, and the guy drowned in the water in the basement. And then there would be a figure, you know, John and John's Pond.
Yeah.
Sometimes you hear John's Pond, and sometimes you hear Jones Pond. It kind of flips back and forth in its name.
But it's not really quite that much still a pond anymore then?
From what I've heard, no. Yeah, the person who owns it, they said it's just a, it's really kind of overgrown. I don't even know there was, I have a video of it from probably the 30s. They're harvesting ice off from it. Hmm. It's a pretty neat video. So it wasn't a huge pond, but it was still a pond.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
There was according to this paper, whether or not it was made up or, you know, but, like, apparently two freshmen at one point, I don't know if they were A-State kids or AU, but, like, saw a ghost rising from the middle of the pond. And that's the story there. They say that the suitor that got murdered in the basement.
Yeah.
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 Again, maybe. It's something very possible. Neat. Very possible.
Another story. Now, this side of the woods. I found a couple things about Pine Hill and the ghosts that reside there. So the tale is, well, I mean, there's the tragic camping story. That I know you told me last semester.
Yeah.
Where,
why don't you go ahead and tell it?
Okay. So two kids, two students just wanted to go out for a night of camping. But so they went over near the hairpin, where the hairpin is now, and they set up their tent. And they brought in, was it a space heater?
Well, in the 1970s, it was a little stove.
Yeah.
And that really wasn't meant not to use to be indoor.
Yeah, they brought it into the tent, and they sadly suffocated.
Carbon monoxide poisoning.
Is tragic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another tale on the hill, though, and this one is of particular interest to me, because I don't know where it came from. There's not, like, any basis or anything like that, but it just says, like, some have spotted a dark figure with red eyes walking along Pine Hill. And I think that's interesting because, okay, I told you about how I went ghost investigating with my friends.
Mm-hmm.
There's two things that happened when we were up there. First of all, and this is the part that I told you, we had this, it's called a spirit box. It's like a ghost investigation tool, basically. And the idea is it goes through radio waves and then, basically like ghosts can like change it to make it say words. That's the idea. However truthful it is, I'm not a scientist, but, so we started getting spooked out, and we're like, oh, let's go to Powell, guys, let's get out of here. And it started giving us directions until we got to the door of Powell, like turn left, go down and stuff. And it was so freaky. But the other part, now I have this friend who is not scared of anything, like she is unbreakable, but like she, as we're walking up along the hill, we're just on the road, she's like, guys, we need to start walking fast right now. And apparently she was seeing this black figure following us, and then she thought she saw it, like, above us in a tree, is the idea? Like, I don't know. I mean, eyes play tricks on people, but, like, she's just not the scaredy cat type. So that freaked me out. Mm-hmm. And then I found the story about a black figure with red eyes, and I thought that was freaky.
So the red eyes, I have had two different people, 20-some years apart,
mention. Wow.
Seen red eyes, and that's the only instance of a figure that makes people, like, really uneasy. Like, there's a sense of malevolence, like, around it.
Yeah.
All the other ghost stories and happenings are like, oh, hey, how are you? Or, like, sort of a jokester. Mm-hmm. So we don't normally talk about ghost stories that involve a suicide, but I'm gonna mention one.
Mm.
Was a friend of mine on campus. The building is no longer there. It was on the site of Ann's house, which was also the location, because it was a fraternity house. And that's where it was a very particular room that they kept experiencing, like, the red eyes, or, like, somebody was crawling into bed with them, like, just an uneasiness feeling. About a year ago, I had somebody come in and say, and again, she knew nothing about it, but she said her friend was in the apartments, the 4th Street apartments, and her room looked out at the hillside, basically up toward Ann's house. And then she looked out one night and she saw red glowing eyes.
Oh my God.
So, wow. So yeah, again, you know, just coincidence, you know, or, and people, yeah, that's why I can't discount this stuff, because the repetition and the length of time.
And what are the chances of it all being in the same area? Because exactly. We were right behind the apartments, yeah. And we had our experiences.
Exactly, right.
Yeah. It's just so centralized and, mm-hmm. A lot of coincidences,
yeah.
All at once.
Right. And of course, before we had buildings, you know, the Seneca, this was the Seneca land. And, you know, they would do summer camps because this was our hunting ground. They didn't have a permanent village here. So what accidents or experiences did they have, you know, that, you know, they may also be roaming the hills as well.
Yeah. And you said once you can see, like, some old foundations of, like, the farmhouses and stuff, right? Like, you don't know any of their stories either.
I don't. I can see. So there were a couple of houses, and, you know, they would have had barns with them as well. So if you were looking at Ann's house, so between Ann's house and Joel's house, in that space on the hillside, there are some foundations from some old houses up there.
Wow.
So absolutely, yeah. Right? So...
yeah. All right. Before we close up, I do have a fun fact. Because one thing that's also kind of related to this, like, ghosts and mystical stuff, is the Twilight Zone. And though we're not sure if it's correct about the Twilight Zone's creator's son coming here, he did speak at commencement one year, you told me.
Yes. So Rod Serling did speak at our commencement. Yes. And I was thinking it was his daughter.
It might have been his daughter.
But I do think, he's one of his kids actually did attend Elfridge University, yeah.
And that's fascinating.
Yeah, it is.
I wonder if we inspired any episodes.
Ooh, that'd be neat to find out. Absolutely.
Nice.
But yeah, and pretty soon we'll be seeing King Alfred with a pumpkin on his head, I'm sure.
Yes.
Halloween's coming.
Yep. I love fall. All right. Any last comments?
Nope. Come visit me in the archives. I'm on the top floor of Herrick if anybody ever wants to know more.
Yep. Thanks everybody for listening, and keep an eye out for any ghosts. It is the season, so
absolutely, yeah. And come let me know so I can build my my repertoire of verified sightings.
Help us collect more. Have a great day.